The hour is 3:25, having arrived, we will call the meeting of the Agriculture Rural Development Committee meeting to order, March 29th. And we are, of course, late because of the budget resolution, so I apologize to folks that we're here on time. This committee always starts on time, but, of course, the House floor meetings take precedence. And in an unprecedented move, we will be taking the entire committee time for House File 1732. So if anyone hears for House File 1560, House File 991, or House File 1743, they will be moved to the agenda tomorrow. So we'll take the unprecedented action of spending the entire meeting on this single bill. So that being said, Representative Blaine, are you here to start to present your bill? And I will outline what we'll be doing here. We do not have a quorum yet. As soon as we do, we will break into whoever is testifying, and we will do a few items that need to be taken care of. And from 3:25 to 3:30, Representative Blaine presents the bill, 5 minutes Department of Ag, 5 minutes questions for the Department of Ag, 20 minutes for opposition testimony, 15 minutes for opposition question for members, 4:15 to 4:35, the same amount as opposition for the proponents, 20 minutes, and then 15 minutes for questions. We will take the amendments. We have four O'Trimble amendments. When we do move the bill, we do have a friendly amendment from the author to get to the bill in the order that the author would like. So we've been spending an unprecedented amount of time on this bill with exactly equal time for both sides. We will be adjourning at 5 o'clock sharp. With that being said, Representative Blaine, welcome to your committee. If you could please present your bill for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, as they will roll in here. House File 1732 is the livestock recommendations that are coming to you as part of the work that was done by the Livestock Advisory Task Force Subcommittee on Zoning and Siting. Members and those here, this is a bill that takes a positive step forward in addressing the livestock needs for the state of Minnesota. First thing I'd like to point out with this piece of legislation, probably one of the most important points about this piece of legislation is this has been a kind of a work in progress. Livestock Zoning and Siting, a subcommittee that I served on, along with Representative Paul Marquardt from my colleagues on the DFL side, also Senator Dill and Senator Vickerman, and others, have put together what we feel is a very proactive piece of legislation. And I think probably the most important point is this legislation is a culmination of a consensual agreement on a number of issue areas and a number of topics. And I'm looking forward to passing this piece of legislation through this body and looking at moving this through the committee process. Mr. Chairman, if it would be all right with you, I'd just take a minute to walk through the overview of the bill.
Representative Blaine, if we could move quite quickly, then we'll get the Department of Ag on and then some questions.
Okay. Members, if you take, I think everybody should have a copy of the bill in your packet. I will go through this relatively quickly because of time here. Section 1 of the bill is a creation of a value-added products facility stock loan program. This is some work that we had done in the last year's ag policy bill in putting together a loan program for livestock producers in the state. Section 2 talks about the deposits of the repayments. This would be a revolving loan account. Section 3 deals with this livestock loan program, the establishment, eligibility. Subdivision 3 deals with equipment loans. This is all through the RFA. And Subdivision 4 of Section 3 deals with eligible expenditures. Section 4 of the bill sets rules as far as the Rural Finance Authority and this revolving loan account. Section 5 of the bill is the establishment of the local road account for routes of regional significance. This allows for grants from appropriation to this account for local roads and for maintenance of those local roads that are serving livestock operations. Section 6 of the bill talks about the grant procedures and criteria. Section 7 deals with feedlot zoning ordinances. Section 8 talks about interim ordinances. In the municipalities that propose interim ordinances on feedlot production. Section 9 deals strictly with feedlot zoning controls. Section 10 is another important part of this bill. It's a $100,000 appropriation each year from the General Fund of the Commissioner of Ag, and this is money used for training technical assistance to county and town officials concerning local zoning and land use planning. Also, there is a $220,000 appropriation from the General Fund to the Commission of Agriculture to be used at the University of Minnesota for research on livestock odor and air quality mitigation. Section 11 deals with transfer of funds and the deposits of repayments, and Section 12 is the repealer. Mr. Chairman, at this time, I would like to move the A5 amendment. This is an amendment to just to clear up some language that after the bill was drafted that we thought would need to be clarified.
Okay, and, do we have a quorum?
We'll have to wait on...
We're unsure of a quorum at this point. What we'll do is, when we do move the bill, we will get the bill in the shape the author would like. That'll be the first thing. Okay, now again, members, please keep... We're scratching every bill off the agenda except Representative Blaine's House File 1732. So keep House File 1560, 991, and 1743 in your packets, if you would, please, for tomorrow. An announcement that tomorrow we will be going... we have the rooms, I believe, until midnight, so we'll go from 2:30 till whenever we get through all the bills that we have on the agenda. Okay, with that, I call before us the Department of Agriculture, Perry Osnes, for 5 minutes. We're going to be, since we're in 10 minutes on the presentation, we'll be cutting out questions to the department and getting right into the opponents of the bill. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Perry Osnes, Deputy Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I thought what I would do is just, I think Representative Blaine's explained the bill to you. I thought maybe I'd just give a little background in terms of how we got to where we are and with the livestock task force process. You recall the governor appointed a livestock task force late in 2002 and really charged them to evaluate the status of Minnesota's livestock industry and make recommendations to support its retention and growth. There were 14 members on this task force, five of which were producers. There was representation from the processing industry, dairy co-ops, ag lenders, as well as commissioners from Department of Employment and Economic Development, Fish Control Agency, and the Department of Agriculture. And so what they worked on a year ago was trying to identify some of the key competitive factors that they felt the state and the administration could try to address to support animal agriculture. They came up with recommendations in five areas, and I won't go through them in any great detail. I think you have a summary of the executive report in your packets, and the report itself is available on the governor's website. But one of the recommendations was access to capital, and I think one of the outcomes of that is the investment tax credit for dairy that has been proposed in the governor's budget, and I know some of the legislators here have been involved with. Another area was improving the permitting, state permitting process for livestock producers, not rolling back 70-20 rules, but trying to make sure that there's more predictability and transparency in the state permitting process. There was a section in there on the research and technology, what the role of the university is in supporting animal agriculture and helping them address management issues, odor technology type of things, looking at ways that they can be a partner in that. And then finally was an area called protection of investment, which was really looking at making sure that the right to farm law was updated and strengthened, and that is something actually the legislature did some work on last year during the time of the task force's meeting. The final area, I think the area that you're dealing with today in this legislation, dealt with the local siting issue and the role that counties and townships play in siting and permitting livestock operations. And I'm sure you're all aware that this has created a lot of concern, a lot of frustration amongst a number of producers who feel like they meet the state, federal requirements, and then are left with trying to work through what requirements there may be at the local level. And so the task force really felt that this is an issue that really needed to be looked at more closely, but they did not feel that they should go forward with that without further engaging representatives from the counties and the townships in their process to hopefully work with them to come up with some recommendations. In addition to that, there was the recommendation made that some legislators ought to be added, and Representative Blaine, Representative Marquardt served on that. We appreciate their help on that. And so kind of what you've got before you today is a summary, I think, or the legislation that goes with the siting recommendations. There really were five parts of that, one of which was training and technical assistance for local units of government in the siting area, looking at providing notice to NDA and the Pollution Control Agency in terms of when a county or a township is looking at new feedlot regulations that's currently required of counties. The recommendation in the legislation is to extend that to townships. One of the areas that the community felt strongly on is that there should be some sort of an economic impact statement looked at. If there's a change in an ordinance by a county or township, that they should try to quantify what the impacts that ordinance or regulation may be on the livestock industry in their jurisdiction. And what we envision doing there is just not an exhaustive type of economic analysis, but probably a real short 2 to 3 page type of document that they would be filling out if one of the members of either the county board or the town board requested that. Fourth area deals with the public notification, and this is just trying to make sure that there's proper notification when a local government, or in this case a township, is looking at enacting an ordinance, that there's proper notice and there's proper posting in a newspaper to let people know. And the final one deals with the odor issue and proposing some additional funding in odor research to the university. That's always an issue when you're talking about livestock operations. There's been a lot of work done, but I think the committee felt strongly that additional research is needed and necessary, and hopefully will help local governments, if this new research is available, help them make good decisions on siting of livestock facilities. So with that, Mr. Chairman, the other part of the bill, the first part relating to the RFA programs, that wasn't really necessarily a part of the siting committee, but it was really part of the overall livestock task force recommendations that the department review its existing loan programs and try to come up with some ways to improve or expand the eligibility for our loan programs to be available to livestock producers.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Do you have a quorum?
No. Okay, no quorum. Okay, thank you. We will continue. We will go from now until 4 o'clock with the opponents of House File 1732. And Mr. Paul Sobosinski will be managing their time, so whoever gets in is kind of up to him. I did meet with Bobby King from Land Stewardship Project this morning, and Mr. Solvesinski was unable to be there because of a family matter, and my condolences go with you, sir. We're glad you're here now. I had promised Donna Buckby from the SMAC that she would have the first 5 minutes, and then Mr. Solvesinski will be able to manage the rest of the time from there. So if Ms. Buckby could come forward.
Thank you very much. Southern Minnesota Action Committee yielded time to the other group speaking. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Buckby. Okay, so we'll go to Mr. Solvesinski and Alan Parrish. If you could please come to the table. It's your bill. Why don't you stay there? Why don't we get another chair here?
They'll go first, and I'll go
first. What, you both want to come up, or what do you want here?
Dale first.
Dale first. Okay, that's very fine. Mr. Dale Hennon, Director of Rural Life, Office of Catholic Archdiocese of St. Paul, Minneapolis, and Board Member of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members. As Representative Davis mentioned, the Minnesota Environmental Partnership, of which I'm here representing today as a board member, is a coalition of 90 conservation and environmental organizations in the state of Minnesota. Our members range from the Lutheran Coalition for Public Policy to the Minnesota Catholic Conference, the League of Women Voters to Land Stewardship Project, Ducks Unlimited to Audubon, and the Nature Conservancy to Clean Water Action. This year, 47 of our members have signed on to MEF's Protect Our Water legislative agenda. Those organizations are on the back of our legislative priorities handout, which we can make available to you after this if you like. Protect Our Water is a set of practical solutions and smart investments to protect and restore Minnesota water and natural resources. Protecting community rights is part of MEF's Protect Our Water 2005 legislative agenda. Let me cite three reasons why the Minnesota Environmental Partnership took this position. First, Minnesotans value clean water and their local environment and want to protect them at the local level. When faced with potentially harmful new developments, local communities should be able to use their local authority to protect community health, lakes, streams, and wetlands. Strong communities depend on strong local decisions. Secondly, Minnesotans overwhelmingly, by 83%, favor townships maintaining the right to create stronger standards than the state to protect the health and well-being of their communities. 83%, according to MEF's statewide telephone poll conducted by an independent, non-Minnesota-based research firm last August. Strong communities depend on the right of townships to create tougher local standards than the state. Weakening the rights of local governments to protect people's health and the outdoors will only hurt our communities and the entire state. The third reason why MEP took this position? Clean lakes, rivers, and streams are so important to Minnesotans that they support 62% of 600 registered Minnesota voters in a statewide telephone poll. 62% supported protecting our water over streamlining regulations that would allow agribusiness to expand. 62% of finding our statewide poll. Minnesotans reject the notion that we must roll back community protections to benefit big agribusiness. I'm here today as a representative of MEP to oppose House File 1732. There are five provisions or specifications of House File 1732 that MEP finds objectionable. We oppose the idea that one elected local official, not the majority, can require an economic impact statement of a proposed local feedlot ordinance.
Mr. Hennon, if you could please hold that point right there. I will officially call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum. Representative Moe moves the minutes of Tuesday, March 22nd. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Blaine moves that House File 1732 be recommended pass and sent to the Committee on
Local Government.
Representative Blaine moves the H1732A5 amendment, which is a technical amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill in the order the author would like. And excuse me, sir, for the interruption, but now we are official.
You want me to start over?
Oh, no. I've got the first part memorized. Well, Representative Erdahl isn't here, so you can start over.
Okay. So I was talking about the objections that MEP has to House File 1732. The first one was that we oppose the idea that one elected state official or local official, not the majority, can require an economic impact statement of a proposed local feedlot ordinance. We also oppose the idea that townships would be required to notify the state before they adopt a local feedlot ordinance. We object to the bill removing the words environmental and social from the optional review and report the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and the Minnesota Department of Agriculture can do of a proposed feedlot ordinance. We object that townships would be required to hold a special hearing with 10 days notice before adopting an interim ordinance that affects feedlots. And finally, we oppose the $200,000 allocation to the Minnesota Department of Agriculture to provide training to township and county officials. MEP believes these provisions undermine township and community rights and are not in keeping with the Minnesota tradition of strong township and community rights. That is why MEP is asking members of this committee to vote against House File 1732 unless these provisions are removed. We do not need this legislation. Current laws are working and provide critical protection for local communities to make their own decisions about new developments. Minnesotans value clean water and their local environment and want to protect them at the local level. We ask that you do nothing to undermine township and community rights. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, sir. Now, Mr. Sobosinski, if you could join us. We're going to go through this until 4 o'clock, and then we'll have questions after that. So if you could just, if the folks that are testifying could stick around, there may be questions for you. Welcome to the committee. Is this Mr. Parrish?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Gunther Mosler.
Oh, Gunther, I talked to you the other day.
And
you did?
Cool. Okay, we have Mr. Gunther Mosler. If you please give us your testimony.
Well, members of the committee, thank you for letting me come to talk about this issue. I'm representing the Randolph Township, and I'm the planning and zoning chairman. I have typed up a handout, and I'm not going to go through the first part of it in order to save some time, but I will go through with you some of the items on HF 732, legislation items that may affect the township's ability to control what's going on. Randolph Township is part of a Metro Council, seven county area. We have home control in Dakota County. We have our own ordinances, I've got the book here. And so we would like to touch on those items that are in the bill. Looking at the first item is Section 5 of the proposal, Subdivision 4, Lines 5-10 through 5-17. This appears to prioritize money in local accounts for maintenance and or improvement of roads to livestock operations over and above other developments such as industrial parks, mining, housing, or shopping developments. These decisions are best made by those responsible for serving the residents of the community, and that's the local officials. Randolph Township has an ordinance in place that requires a developer of any of the above projects to install the roads, including curb and gutter if required. And once that has been approved by the road engineer, and the township board will then assume the responsibility of going for the ongoing maintenance. The township board does not want any changes in this ordinance. Section 7, Subdivision 3C, Line 624 through 636. And I combined this with Section 9 and Subdivision 2D. Question would be, why should the Minnesota Department of Agriculture have to be notified if you have no jurisdiction in this matter? It's expanding state intrusion on local issues beyond the MPCA, which already regulates air, water, and waste, and which has the total regulatory authority on this. This seems to address any county boards that have to act when township does not have zoning ordinances in place, but in our case, we do have the home rule. This legislation would allow a single member of the board to request an economic impact analysis of a proposed feedlot ordinance. Question would be, who will pay for this? What's the responsibility for those opposing the ordinance changes? Will the local government be able to request economic impact statements from livestock producers, including the salary and benefit details of the employees, as well as the subsidies it receives? All the information, if it's available from various state agencies about any proposal, should be given to the county and township boards for their decision process, and also made as a public information. This legislation allows a minority to make a decision that should only be done by a majority vote of the board. The minority should certainly be heard in an open discussion, but the final vote for the majority members should be kept intact. This is a democratic process at work, and again, it depends on the townships concerning livestock facility ordinances that do not apply to ordinances from other forms of development. There seems to be a favoritism in this series. Randolph Township Board wants to continue to be governing body following the ordinances in place with a majority vote as a proper solution. Subdivision 8, or Section 8, I'm sorry, Subdivision 4B, lines 729 and 734. Comment is, the interim ordinance provisions should not be different for livestock production development than any other forms of development. Should be the same. Section 10A. Township officials' training should come from the entities traditionally giving that responsibility. The Minnesota Department of Ag has no authority over township governance, nor do the producers' groups. Special interests may contribute an input in public hearings and so forth, and they should not be in charge of training programs for local officials. Again, livestock ordinance training should not be given priority, nor should it be excluded. It's simply another issue about what the officials should be informed about. Remember, there are county and township planning commissions consist of farmers, retired farmers, as well as cross-section of community citizens. We better than the Minnesota Department of Agriculture have an understanding of our communities and economic drivers. We have a shared vision of our community and are at the base of our classes of democracy. We simply do not need any changes at this time. That's my testimony.
Thank you very much, sir. Okay, Mr. Sobosinski.
Mr. Chairman, a question.
We're actually going to have questions on this bill. Okay. Not unlike the atrazine one. Where
At
4 o'clock we're going to go into questions for the opponents.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative Magnus. Yep. Thank you, sir. Mr. Mosler, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and we're testifying today with concerns, but I would say we are opposed to the bill as it's worded at this time. Just to say a couple of things, the loans, I think that's a good idea, the money and capturing that, and that kind of gets down to what we're talking about today is I don't hear farmers, as I travel the state, maybe 50, 75 farm meetings a year. I go out all the time and they talk about siting and siting issues. I don't hear it that this is a problem. This is what's stopping me. I do hear that access to capital and that financial responsibilities are a problem. And so I think that the first part is good. Anytime we can make the RFA more responsive to our needs is excellent. And I think that was a good part that we had last year, too. We do have concerns, like the gentleman before us mentioned, about the part on the economic impact statements. I think it's fine the way it is right now. If we look at the current wording that's already in the bill and then look at the stricken language, it already calls for...
Mr. Peterson, what page are you on?
Page 6. I've got to read through the lines, but it says that they must prepare... Or prepare a report on the environmental and agricultural effects on specific provisions in the ordinance. I don't hear complaints that that's a bad thing or that's not working well, and I think that adding this language, could add heartburn out in the countryside, and I think that we should just keep that part the way it is. And if we do or if the committee were to pass this bill, the part where it says any member of the county board, I definitely think it should be a majority if you were to lead that in. I mean, that just makes sense, I think. That's one member could tie up. I don't think that's right. The road account, I just want to mention this briefly, and I've mentioned this to Representative Blaine. I appreciate that he's been willing to hear some of our concerns on this bill. I always look at this and we say that a lot of times large operations are stopped because they'll say, oh, the roads aren't ready for it, or there's not enough money for the roads. And I'm just concerned, or I'd like to hear clarifications on this, so I hope the people that are pro on this, because it looks like it's a giveaway a lot of times to a bigger operation moving in. And, you know, we're still concerned about my township road. Maybe my township can, access this fund, and this will be, it'll all be level and everything. My road's been underwater for two weeks. But what about, it also says livestock operations, and we've been talking a lot about livestock operations, but we have a lot of grain operations too in the western part of the state. We have a lot of concerns. Representative Johnson is a guy who's very upset about the grain carts and the damage they're doing to the town roads in her area. So I'm just concerned about how that works. On the 10-day ordinance too, the gentleman said that the public hearing would call for a 10-day notice, but it's actually a 10-day notice after notice is given in a publication of a newspaper. And again, I think that this is working fine and doesn't need to be added into that. The last part I would comment on quick, trying to be as brief as possible, is that Farmers Union has supported having education available for township officials. That is something that we hear a lot of times. They don't want to mess with it. And also making the money available. I would rather see somebody more neutral than the Department of Ag doing the training. If that was the case, I think that that would be good for everybody involved. And so like the Office of the Local Planning Assistance Center or somebody like that, I think would be a much more appropriate place to carry that out. So those are some of my concerns.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Mr. Sobosinski, and while Mr. Sobosinski's coming forward, we've got about 3 minutes here. In fact, I'll make some announcements after. I don't want to take away your time. Mr. Sobosinski and Mr. Parrish, you have till the top of the hour. Gentlemen, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Paul Sobosinski. I work with the Land Searcher Project. I also farm in southwestern Minnesota. I want to be brief and just basically cover, because some of the points have been covered already. I'm going to cover one point that has not been covered yet, or I haven't seen a great deal put out, and it's on page 7 of the bill. It's a piece that refers to the 10-day notice provision, and we would like to see that section left out and current law left as is. If you are looking at working with that particular piece, we want to, and are going to leave that in, we want to see at least that there is not a safe harbor during that 10-day period, that operation can't go forward during that period of time. The second thing is notification. Better notification, first of all, to townships, and then up front, within 10 days of a permit, and we have some language. If you're interested in that, we can see if that comes up in the questions. But that being an important piece. One general picture. In my experience of working with farmers and rural residents, and the calls that I've gotten in terms of concerns that people have, the most important piece that I'm always dealing with local folks when they call, is making sure they have the right information. And so I'm always telling them, go to your planning and zoning office if you're dealing with the county situation. Find out what's in that permit, what's being talked about, so you're not talking about hearsay when it's coming up. And so I think when you're looking at this process, one way to improve the process out there is better information sooner to local residents and to the township officers. With that, I'll introduce Alan Parrish, who is a member of our State Policy Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Sobosinski. Mr. Parrish, please state your name and your representative for the record, please, sir.
Alan Parrish. I'm a recently retired dairy farmer. I'm a township officer for the past 18 years. I dairy farmed probably about approximately 40 years. And along with Land Stewardship, I'm a Farmers Union member. Two things I'd like to address this. One, it has been touched on already, the $100,000 to the training and technical. That ought to go to local planning and assistance center. It's an unbiased and a more neutral organization. And then the second part that hasn't been touched on is the roads. The way I read the legislation on page 5, lines 10 through 17, is that the money's coming out of the regional government pot. from the I happen to sit on our regional commission. It's made up of county the DOT in our District 3 is made up of county engineers, county commissioners, and township officials as such, plus the DOT of that region. They prioritize road projects that need to be done in their areas, their districts. In my county, last year, we finally gotten a road project that was conceived about 16 or 18 years ago, and what they do with these projects is they prioritize on safety, usage, and for a livestock operation to be able to just come in and get prioritized over the needs of the and the welfare of the state's citizens, I think is wrong. I suppose my time's about run out, so thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Okay, with that, we will open up for questions. If I could, first of all, Mr. Sobosinski, have you found our office to be open to your concerns as you have come forth on various issues?
Mr. Chairman, yes, so we found your office to be very open and considerate. And
I just want to make sure.
Appreciate that opportunity. Appreciate the opportunity, for example, to testify before us many other times and to state our position and also perhaps in the time that you moved on some of the amendments we requested.
Thank you, Mr. Sobosinski. Just was checking on Clark to make sure he's doing his job. Okay, with that, thank you, Mr. Sobosinski. I have a question, first of all, any questions for the two defined gentlemen at the table here? And then I do have a question for Mr. Peterson. So, but let's, as long as we have these two fine gentlemen here, we'll start with Representative Magnus.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. I think we're on, aren't we? Gentlemen, I've got a couple questions about your organization that I'm trying to sort through. And how many members do you have in your organization,
Mr. Sobosinski?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that we have approximately about 3,000 members.
Representative Magnus,
3,000 members. And approximately, what are your dues to
Mr. Sobosinski?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Magnus, our dues are $35 per year.
Representative Magnus.
Thank you. So your general revenue is approximately how much? Can you give me an estimate of what your income is for your organization?
Mr. Sobosinski?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Magnus, I really don't have the answer to that.
Approximately.
The person who directs the policy program would have to answer that question, or our executive director.
Representative Magnus?
As I'm trying to sort this out with that size of membership and the membership fees, and then I'm trying to sort out how much money you spend, and then where are you getting it from? That's been generally the questions questions I've been asked of your organization.
Mr. Sobosinski?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Magnus, we get a lot of donations way above that amount. We get a lot of people who give special amounts because they believe in what our organization is doing, the values that we talk about, and they believe in the stewardship of our resources.
Representative Magnus?
Well, could you give me an example about who some of your leading donors are?
To that point, Representative
Trumbo. Thank you, Mr. Chair, but I think we're on bill number 1732, and I think because of our time limit, we should be discussing the bill and not who's testifying and what they're worth.
Okay, Representative Magnus, are you laying a foundation?
I am, Mr. Chairman, and I would ask then another question that relates to the bill is if you have about 3,000 members, how many members roughly do you know? How many members you have elected to township boards now,
Mr. Sobosinski?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Magnus, I don't know that answer. I do know that we have a significant number of folks who are in as well members, but I don't know that answer.
Representative Magnus?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Chairman, do you have a question or were you questioning on the question?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I was just wondering if we could then ask the salaries of all the Department of Ag people.
You can get that on the website, I think.
Well, maybe they should put it on.
For example, Trimble, it's a lot more than we make.
I know that. Yeah. I actually know the numbers.
You run for the legislature so we can eventually become
the janitor at the Department of Ag make twice as much.
Okay. For the salary,
okay, let's have Pennis.
I have a question for Mr. Representative Blaine. Does the Minnesota Association of Townships support or not support your bill?
Representative Blaine, please take the microphone.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pennis, I will. I thank you for that question. Minnesota Association of Townships does support the bill the way the bill is drafted. They also are supportive of the technical amendments that I made to put the bill in the shape that we're hearing it right now. And Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'd like to re-stress the fact that this has been a consensual work in progress in addressing needs of the livestock industry and the needs of local units of government in the state of Minnesota. We've had representation from the Minnesota Association of Townships and the Association of Minnesota Counties at all of the planning and zoning zoning subcommittee meetings, and it is through the work and the consensual agreement between local units of government and others who are part of that subcommittee that this piece of legislation comes before this body.
Thank you.
Okay, one thought that I... Any other questions for Mr. Sobosinski or Mr. Parrish? Thank you, gentlemen. If Mr. Peterson could come forward, I've got a couple questions. And a lot, we've heard a lot about local control here, and I was at a township office meeting last night in Houston County in Caledonia, and we do have... I should just wait till after it's Associated Townships makes their presentation as supporters, I'm not going to take any opponents' time here. I do want to talk about the townships in just a little bit here. But when we do talk about local control members, we do have to remember that some of the folks say you have to have local control, which I'm a huge supporter of. We have to also realize that if somebody wants to put in 8,000 cow dairy and the township board supports it, that's local control. Or maybe we should repeal the, and I'm not suggesting this, but if we repeal the state corporate farm law so that we can have local control by township officers. So it's kind of a two-way street here, and we kind of have to be careful when we talk local control because that can cut both ways. Mr. Peterson, on the roads and bridges, as I read the bill, and I actually read this bill. I don't read that many, but when they said it was six pages, I thought I could probably handle it. You'd mentioned about the roads and bridges, and you said something about bigger livestock operations coming in, but wouldn't it be true if you're going to have 500 animal units, it could be one farm with 500, or it could be 10 farms with 50?
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, sure, yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I just want
to know that you were
specific per se, for size.
No. And,
I'm very sensitive about size.
So, and I am too, Mr. Chairman, but I thank you, but. No, my point is just, what I said earlier, it's stated clearly enough that, I'm just concerned that my township where we have, on my road, the mile road I live on, we still have four dairies that milk under 100 cows, that they'd be as eligible for this as the new guy putting in a 4,000 cow dairy in Fillmore County. So that's, and I'm just not clear that they, that's what that is. And also we were concerned about...
It's not going to happen in Fillmore County.
Okay, good. But also, Mr. Chairman, I put this out from numbers, and I did have one member ask about from the western part of the state down there, ask about the livestock operations, and we do have a member, we talked last year a lot about grain carts and all the destruction they're supposedly doing as they get to be 1,500 bushel units going down the roads, and so they need some help too on the roads. So just a concern, and I'm not clear on it, and I just wanted to bring that up.
Thank you, Mr. Pearson. Just so you know, I have a bill that will be introduced that will be talked about in the next few months, probably won't go anywhere this year because it has some bonding provisions to put extra money in the township road and bridge account, because as we do get some of these larger farms in there, they are harder on the roads. I mean, they use semis instead of 100 bushel wagons, and so that bill will be coming forward too.
just so you're aware of that, and it won't be size specific, but I do want to get some more money out in the infrastructure for farm to market roads and bridges. Representative Blaine.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I could just make a couple quick points to that issue there. This road account has been in statute for a few years now, and we're not. I think there was a testifier before who may have thought that we're taking money away from other areas in order to fund this. This account has not had funding in the past, and it's only through the bonding provision because there is a provision in the bonding bill right now that would fund this part of this piece of legislation. Also, it's very important that I clarify to members of this committee, this bill is not sized. There is nothing in this piece of legislation that favors large over small or small over large when we're talking about the livestock industry. I think this is part of the consensual agreement that we had with the members of the Zoning and Siting Subcommittee that we recognize the importance of all sizes and all types of livestock production in the state, and has been the goal of this subcommittee, and I think is the goal of many of the members of this committee, and I certainly hope it is the goal of many members of this committee, that we continue to look at and try to strengthen our livestock sector in the state of Minnesota, and this is, in my estimation, this legislation is the first step in doing that.
Okay, 3 minutes left for questioning. Representative Johnson, then we'll come to Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Peterson. Help me understand a little bit more about how the Farmers Union sees this piece of legislation as perhaps the beginning of erosion of local control. You mentioned some specific ideas about the road situations and the calling of for a report based on a single vote. Could you talk a little bit more philosophically about how that will undermine local control? Some people have said that this is just a compromise representing the discussions that have been going on for quite some time from the Governor's Livestock Task Force. Where do you see that we are about to step downhill in ways that we really don't want to go?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, I guess, if you look at the economic impact statement and requiring, saying that they may do these economic impact statements, we think our township officers, and I think there's a lot of township officers in Farmers Union, anytime the townships have their days here, it's great because we get to see a lot of our members. But I think that they... I have confidence in them that when they enact an ordinance, they know what they're doing, that they know the financial implications, they know the environmental and economic impacts and agricultural impacts that are consequences of their decision. And I think they don't need to be told again and have it run up the flagpole again. If people don't like it, you vote them out in 3 years or a year or whenever they're up. And so that's where... In the beginning, when I look at this, I don't see any need for that, and that's where I think it goes to starting to affect what the local unit of government's doing.
Representative Otremba?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me, Representative Johnson, are you done?
That's all, thanks.
Representative Otremba, and then Welty, if we have time, Representative Otremba.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, was there a problem with the what some of us call the local control, Ms. Representative Blaine? If so, can you tell me what problems there were that there was such a need to change these, what I think are some strong local democracy?
Is that to Assembly?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative McCrumb, I'm not quite sure what your question is. I guess...
Well, basically, Representative Blaine, were there problems, or why did you draft this so that it took out some pieces of local control.
Mr. Chair,
specific instances.
Representative Blaine, Representative Tremblay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tremba, there is no taking away of local control with House File 1732. There is no attempt by the Zoning and Siting Subcommittee of the Livestock Advisory Task Force to weaken or to strip local units of government of their control. I think the consensus was that there was concerns by not only producers but local units of government in the decision-making process. And when you look at the bill as a whole and you look at the measures in this bill that look to help local units of government and producers out there in having definitive timelines, in having a permitting process that's transparent, both for the producers and for local units of government. And I'm very confident that if this bill would have made any attempt or would be drafted in such a way that local control would be threatened or harmed, that we would not have the support of our two fine units of local control, local government, and that is the townships and the counties.
Okay, with that, we're going to move on. I'm going to have to pass on Magnus and then Welty. Hopefully they'll be the first up if they have questions on the other side. And what you learned in this business, if you didn't get your questions in here and you really want to ask somebody there, you can kind of get them in on the proponent side. Kind of, you know, go around a little bit. That works. Okay, we will now start with Kent Sulem, attorney for the Minnesota Association of Townships. And who's kind of running your show here? Because I'll tell you what, you got a whole lot of folks. Okay, as far as the opponents go, I do want to note for members that there was a letter from the League of League of Women Voters, State of Minnesota, right? In opposition to the bill, for the record, and also for the record, members and folks in attendance, there's letters of support from the Farm Bureau, Soybean Growers, Minnesota Association of Township, Minnesota Veterinary Medical Association, Minnesota Pork Producers, Farm Credit Service, Minnesota Milk Producers, Minnesota Association of Co-ops. Just so members have that. And again, if some weren't in here, I apologize to Representative Heigerken for the two bills that were putting off till tomorrow, Representative Blaine for 1743. Representative Dunkey.
Just a technical question.
Yes,
since,
sir.
I was in another committee and was like, give me your time frames. And I'm trying to figure out when I can ask a question, and I'm not sure at this point.
Okay.
I have questions on the bill, technical questions for the author and other things. When is there going to be a chance for that after the...
Yes. After the proponents are down at 4:35, we'll go from questions at 4:35 to 4:50. Then we have 10 minutes for amendments, and we have to be out here at 5. We're voting probably about 2 minutes to 5. So you want to, we'll put Welty, Magnus, and then Junkie after the next testimony. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name, who you represent for the record. Please, sir, and present your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, I am Kent Sulem, representing the Minnesota Association of Townships. I will try to keep my comments as brief as possible, focusing only on those sections of the bill that have the most direct impact on townships. For the record, our association is in full support of House File 1732 as introduced, and with the technical amendment, I believe it's the A5 amendment that corrects some typographical errors that we discovered in reviewing the bill, including the name of our association. Troy Gilchrist from our office was the delegate from our association that the governor placed on the subcommittee, the zoning and siting subcommittee, and worked very hard with all the members to make sure that this bill would not have an extreme negative impact on local control. We were actually very pleased with the outcome of the legislation, considering some of the things that had originally been put on the table, and feel that this bill does represent a nice balanced approach that protects the township rights while addressing some of the concerns that have been raised by the task force. Section 5 of the bill on pages 4 and 5 is the first section that has a direct impact on township, and that is the section that provides recognition of funding for township roads of significance that might be involved with the livestock industry. As Representative Blaine has pointed out, there is no size-specific requirements on this. This actually was one of the surprises in the bill for us, that we were actually pleased to see a recognition that so often the money is focused on the county system, which we have always supported. We've testified in support of upgrading the county roads to 10 tons. But we've always asked the question, how do you get to the county road? How do you get off the farm to get to that county road if you don't upgrade the local road first? And this gives recognition, and I just point out the language that says up to 10% is set aside. So in a region where there is not a problem or that they feel the money should be prioritized differently, they could set it at zero, they could set it at one-half of 1%. It simply gives the flexibility for the locals to decide where that funding priority should occur and recognizes livestock as one more area. Section 8 on page 7 is the provision that will require townships now to provide 10 days notice prior to the adoption of a moratorium if it relates to animal agriculture and that sort of thing. This is something that, while not current law, that as one of the attorneys at our association, we actually have been advising our members to do anyhow. Prior to a court case in, I believe, 1993, we believe it was law. We think it is a matter of good practice. And so while we normally do not support modifications to our zoning, this is one that we actually feel reflects an advisable practice anyhow. While we'd like to have those notices free of charge, it's one that we felt we could live with. As long as has been previously mentioned, there is no intent and no attempt by any other amendment to create a safe harbor. Anybody who applies during this 10-day notice period is subject to the moratorium if it's adopted, just as they are under current law, just as any other applicant would be. If there's any attempt to create a safe harbor, that would lead to our opposition. But as drafted, we are fine with Section 8. Section 9 is probably the area where some of the most controversy has occurred. 9A, providing the extra notice to PCA. However, because there is no mandate or authority for the PCA to undo our local zoning, we felt that, having additional information was not a harmful thing. We still have the right locally to decide what the best decisions are. And as far as submitting the ordinance, the language says may submit. We're not even mandated to submit, which is an important piece of the bill. It allows us at the local level to decide what information we need and who we wish to seek it from. And so we do encourage that language being left as may, the way it's drafted. Section D, or Part D of that section, is the one that caused us the most concern, the economic impact study. However, Troy reported back and talked to our board of directors and a number of town officers before we signed off on the section. And I just conferred with Mr. Osmus before we started this hearing. And it was the general understanding that the studies, and we were hoping to have a copy of one here today from the state of Wisconsin. Unfortunately, the individual that has those, nobody could reach in time for today's hearing. We'll try to have that before the next round of hearings. But they are very short, self-conducted studies, if requested at all. They will not require the use of outside consultants. We will not support anything that requires us to bring in, mandates us to bring in outside consultants. This is something essentially where the town board would make a handful of phone calls, take some input, and type up what amounts to the samples that were handed out at the subcommittee discussion on this. Were one half page to a page long acknowledgement of some of the issues that the town supervisors had heard. If that is truly what the template comes out, we have no opposition to that section. If there's any attempts to go beyond that, we'll have to be back here correcting that. But it's the understanding of our association and the members that I've talked to that were serving in the task force that it is these short, simple, self-conducted studies, and only if requested internally. Finally, on Section 10 of the bill, on page 9, the training piece, we never feel it's wrong to have additional training and education, particularly if it's in partnership with our association. We, too, would love to have that training provided by the local planning assistance group, Unfortunately, the governor has recommended that that particular organization be completely eliminated in his budget. So anything you can do to put $300,000 back into the Department of Admin's budget, that is an extraordinarily valuable tool of the state. It is a wrong thing to eliminate for a number of reasons, this just being one more reason.
This is home group, please stick to the bill at hand.
And, well, I was going to say, it is related to the bill at hand in that we would like to see that money used, however it's administered, to support the local planning assistance program so that they can do the training required under this bill. In closing, I'll simply say that this bill took a lot of effort and a lot of compromises on all sides. However, it's our association's hope that it will once and for all put an end to a lot of the controversies and fights that have occurred on both sides of the issue, and that rather than having to come back here and fight various attacks on local control, both sides will live with this bill for a few years. If there's unintended consequences, obviously we'll come back and try to deal with those, but that this will put an end to the chronic sessions that we've had every year of having to fight attacks on local control. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Solomon. We will now go to Bob Wirth, and while he's coming up here, I just do want to say for folks that are here, we do have to be out of here by 5, and we will have a vote before that. This is not the end of this bill. This is a very open process. It's a work in progress. There's many stops. There's another committee tomorrow. Then I think Representative Blaine, there's another committee Tuesday or Monday or Tuesday or someplace. You've got several stops to go yet. So if members or if people from the public here have concerns, this is not the last stop for this bill. Also, before we go on, it's as the rule of the Ag Committee, was there are any of the people on the list are actually private citizens that we really do need to get to, or are we all representing somebody?
Mr. Wirth's a private citizen.
What's that?
Mr. Wirth is a private citizen.
Yeah, but he's a hitman for the Minnesota Soybean Board. So. Those hacks.
He's a private citizen in Lincoln County.
Oh, he is? Okay, be nice to him.
You got a long way to
okay,
go.
Okay. Mr. Wirth, welcome to committee. Sir, please state your name and you represent for the record.
I'm Mr. Chairman and the committee. My name is Bob Wirth. I'm Vice President of Minnesota Soybean Grove.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. I'm here to give you a little overview of why the Minnesota Soybean Association thinks this is a very good bill. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak today in support of House File 1732. Animal agriculture is at a critical juncture in Minnesota, and I commend this committee for looking at ways to help the state's livestock industry grow in a fair and just manner. As a soybean farmer, I'd like to address how important animal agriculture is to the future profitability of the soybean industry in Minnesota. Soybeans are basically meal and oil, with 95% of the meal going for livestock. Here in Minnesota, the livestock industry consumes the equivalent of 74 million bushels of soybean annually. The livestock is our biggest and best customer. If Minnesota continues to lose livestock production, the market price for soybeans could be reduced as much as 68 cents a bushel. Neither the soybean industry nor the state of Minnesota can afford this kind of loss. Soybean farmers aren't the only ones who benefit from the livestock industry. The livestock industry contributes $30 billion, I'll say that again, $30 billion to the state's economy each year. And 100,000 people rely directly on animal agriculture to make their living. This includes the farmers, the farm families who for generations have made a living off the land. The vast majority of farmers who raise livestock in Minnesota care about their families and the environment. They want to remain active on their land and in their communities. They strive to be good neighbors and often voluntarily exceed the rules and regulations covering their business. Clear, consistent, and reasonable regulation and processes are needed for the livestock industry to remain viable and profitable. I believe that House File 1732 addresses these very important issues. I would like to thank Representative Blaine for inviting me here today, and I would like to thank the committee as well for their willingness to invest in the future of agriculture in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you very much, Mr. Worth. We have 6 minutes left for Jerry Jensen, Dave Priester, Lowell Schaefer, and Joel Swedberg. Jerry Jensen, Minnesota Milk Producers. Welcome, committee, sir. If you please present your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jerry Jensen. I'm a dairy producer from Stearns County and a member of Minnesota Milk. I'm also a town board supervisor in North Fork Township and have been the chair for the past 9 years. And I would like to speak in support of this bill. First of all, as a town board supervisor, I want to say that I see nothing in the bill that does anything but help me make a good decision. And as a town board supervisor, that's our goal, is to make good decisions that are based on science and not necessarily emotion. And I appreciate the part in the bill that gives us a chance to get some money for roads. Our township has a total budget of approximately $65,000 a year, and we have 42 miles of road to try to maintain. Somebody wants to put up a larger farming operation. We don't have extra money to help fix that road. All we've got is to just maintain what we have. So I appreciate that, and that may be necessary. The other parts, notifying the Department of Ag and MPCA, seem to me to be the right places for us to go to get information, and those would be the experts that I think we would seek out. As a dairy producer, I'm in support of the bill because first of all, livestock and dairy in Minnesota has been on the decline, and I think that's the whole intent of the bill, is to help stimulate some growth or at least stop the decline. I appreciate that as a dairy producer, and I also want to be treated fairly when I go to my town board. And of course, as a chair, it helps in it that I have been treated fairly. Anytime,
it helps, doesn't it?
Some experience. Anytime in the future that if my children, our dairy now is about 138 cows, if it is to remain in our family and continue another generation, I have no doubt it will have to grow. And in order to be competitive, and when I and my children go to our town board, we want to be treated fairly, and I think this bill will help give us that opportunity.
Mr. Jensen, is it true that you were the dairy producer of the year in 2002?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Congratulations, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Dave Priestler, Minnesota Pork Producers.
Chairman, is Stearns County still the largest dairy county?
I thought Fillmore was. I don't know how many pieces of cheese they made at Litchfield, though.
8 million.
8 million.
A day.
Mr. Priestler, please state your name and who represents the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is David Priestler. I'm the executive director for the Minnesota Pork Producers Association.
Welcome to committee, sir.
Thank you. On behalf of the Minnesota Pork Producers, I extend our support for House File 1732. I believe it's a beginning to support animal agriculture. And it's a good start from which to build on. And I was interested in hearing Representative David's comments earlier on some other things to come, and would like to work with him on that. Providing incentives for livestock producers, ensuring due process and government actions, and exploring new avenues of infrastructure upgrades are all appropriate functions for the legislature to address, and we support the bill as written. There can always be items and bills that can be improved, but there was a consensus among the stakeholders in this process, and as you just heard earlier, the Association of Townships has agreed with the bill as written. Livestock production is important to the state economically and environmentally. The demand for livestock manure greatly exceeds the supply at this time, especially because of high fuel costs. It takes large amounts of natural gas to make commercial fertilizers. Manure provides better yields for crops, and it's cheaper than commercial fertilizer. A vote for livestock reduces dependence on imported fertilizer and more homegrown economic development. I appreciate your time. Again, I'll stand for any questions, and finally, we do support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Priestler. Okay, we now have Mr. Lowell Schaefer, from the Director of AgStar Minnesota Farm Credit Services. Please state your name. Who you represent for the record, please, sir.
I'm Mr. Chairman. My name is Lowell Schaefer. I represent the four farm credit associations that do business in Minnesota. I'm a farmer producer. I serve on the board of directors of AgStar, which is one of those. I'm here today on behalf of the Farm Credit Service Association serving Minnesota and our 23,000 member borrowers. I want to express our strong support for House File 1732, a bill to strengthen animal agriculture in this state. This House file implements several of the recommendations of the Governor's Task Force on Animal Agriculture. The Farm Credit Service's representative served on the original task force and its subsequent working group. We are actively involved in developing the recommendations presented to the Governor, and we are pleased that Representative Blaine has begun the process of implementing these proposals. Some of the recommendations of the task force can be implemented administratively and through local government, but other efforts require legislative actions. House File 1732 does not accomplish all that needs to be done to encourage improvements in our animal production sector, but it is a good start. It lays the basis for even more and better efforts in the future. Farm Credit Services provides credit and financial services to nearly 23,000 producers, large and small, in Minnesota, also to agribusiness, rural residents across the state. We currently have $2.75 billion in loans that are outstanding in Minnesota. As a cooperative credit organization, our borrowers are our owners. Obviously, we have a huge stake in the future success of the agriculture sector and the health of rural Minnesota. We want agriculture to prosper, and House File 1732 helps do that.
Okay, sir, I'm sorry to do this, but we're going to have to...
One paragraph.
Okay.
Please allow me in a very brief time to take off my farm credit hat and put on my farmer hat. I'm a fifth-generation livestock producer. In all the years, nothing has ever left and sold off our farm that did not walk off in the form of value-added beef or pork. I also have the daily privilege of working side-by-side with the sixth generation in the form of two sons and two daughters-in-law. Almost every day when I drive onto the farm, the seventh generation comes running out and they're greeting us, "Hi, Grandpa, what are you doing today? Can I help?" Ladies and gentlemen, that is the motivation of most permit requests in Minnesota. State and local governments should encourage that motivation, not discourage it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schaefer. Mr. Swedberg, if you can come down and state your name, who you represent, and say you support the bill, and then leave. I'm sorry, Mr. Schaefer. We have to. I want to be fair to both sides.
Yes, sir. I can do that.
Please state your name. Who represents for the record, please?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Joe Swedberg with Hormel Foods Corporation. I'm Vice President of Legislative Affairs and Marketing Services for the company. The Hormel Foods Corporation, along with Genio Turkey Store, has been proud to be in Minnesota for the last 113 years. We started in 1892, and because we're in Minnesota, it's based on the strong agricultural climate and the base of great employees we've had over 113 years in the state. So it's very important that we see this sector continue to move on. I'm here on behalf of Minnesota AgriGrowth as I'm vice chair, and I'm pleased to offer our support for Bill 1732. I understand this bill has become known as the Governor's Livestock Task Force Bill. It's something that I can attest to because I served on both the task force. I served on the Livestock Task Force, and I served on the Siting Task Force with Representative Blaine. I can tell you that this task force did a great deal of work on this, took a great deal of time to carefully consider everything that was involved with this, and I won't rehash that because I think Representative Blaine said it very well, but it was size neutral, and we think that's very important. There are some important things I do want to share with the committee in Minnesota. While the hog and poultry sectors are at present time holding their own and doing very well, the beef and dairy industry have been suffering, and we're really at a crossroads, which I think was mentioned before. And while some of the current challenges are not in our control, they're driven by markets, global economy, etc., other solutions in our industry are under our control. We do need to reach some solutions because nothing done or letting current trends continue would allow other states and counties, or excuse me, countries, to determine our fate. We're constantly, we have businesses in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, Nebraska, etc. They're all coming after us to move to their states. Half our employees, we have 16,000 employees with Hormel Foods Corporation. Half of them are in Minnesota between Hormel and Genio Turkey Store.
We pay $350 million annually in wages in this state. We pay $19 million in taxes to the state. And so it's very important to us to continue here. Finally, let me just cover a couple of other provisions. I think the attorney for the Township Association did an excellent job going over the provisions. I think the most important point is that all the points that he listed do not mitigate local control, but rather strengthen those elected officials' knowledge and resources to make sound decisions for the communities. It was the task force determinations, as Representative Blaine indicated earlier, that if we were brought anything beyond this, this would have been dead on arrival and would not have happened. So we were very careful to do that, and I think it's I think we've done an excellent job, and I appreciate the opportunity here to support House File 1732. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. We'll now go into questions. Well, to Magnus Junkie, but first of all, I would just like to make be very clear. When this bill first came up early in session, or we were talking about the bill, the first group that I had in my office with Vice Chair Blaine and others was the Township Officers Association and Mr. Fricke. And my first question was point blank is, do the Township Officers Association support this bill? And the answer was an emphatic yes. And I think that's very important. And it also goes into, when we start talking about amendments, that support, what I got from Mr. Fricke, was based on not being changed, or, and then he's very clear about that, which was a very fair statement to make. Okay, with that, Welty Magnus Junkie, and then if there's others, we'll take those, and then we will be at 10-2 cutting it off and working on amendments if the author so desires. Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would appreciate it if Mr. Solem would come up to the table. And this question can either go to Representative Blaine or Mr. Solem, but I'm taking a look at page 6, lines 24 through 30, and I've received a number of emails with constituents in my district who are concerned of local control being taken away. And the one provision of the bill that I did see that I could raise some questions with was this section. And so I read it over probably 4 or 5 times. And I'm wondering if the people who emailed me read the bill over 4 or 5 times. Because every time I've read this bill, I've had more and more questions come up. But at this point, in my interpretation, I have this question and I have a follow-up question to this. If I read it over, it says, at the request of any member of the county board, the county must prepare a report. We struck out environmental and agriculture, and we put in economic. Is it your understanding, I've been on boards before, we have a 5-member county board, and 3 out of the 5 members vote to have a report done. Wouldn't the county perform or ask for the report? Do we even know this in statute?
Mr. Small?
Mr. Chair, Representative Welty, first of all, I just want to say, while that section refers to the counties, the comparable language for townships is on page 9. Traditionally speaking, I mean, if there's a concern, or, you know, the hope would be that, yes, the town board would authorize whatever, I mean, our training, our advice would be, if in doubt, seek out the information, make phone calls, ask questions, get the job done, and an informed choice. So you are correct that the best management practice would be that, yes, with or without this provision, if they think there's an economic impact, hopefully somebody on the board is raising that, and the rest of the board, whether it be county or township, is doing it. However, as I stated before, the reason why we have great concern about that provision of the bill, when Trey Gilchrist talked to our board and signed off on it, it was under the understanding that, again, this is just saying, if it's requested, it's going to be this very informal. We would actually hope that if there's that serious of a concern, the board is doing more on their own, but this mandate is just for the nominal stuff.
Representative Junkie? Well, it's been a long day, and tomorrow's going to be a lot longer, members.
Thank you, Chairman Davis. Thank you, Mr. Solem. And then my follow-up question to this would be, there is nothing in this section that would prevent a county board from requesting an environmental, an agriculture, an economic, or any other study, am I correct? And this applies to the township. You talked about the township provisions also. I'm asking you
from your perspective.
Mr. Stone?
Mr. Chair, with Walty, my reading of the bill as an attorney for the Township Association is there's nothing that would prohibit us from seeking any study we want to seek voluntarily. It is simply imposing one new possible nominal mandate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to point that out, that I really do not believe that we are taking away local control by passing this legislation.
Representative Magnus, I'm going to go to Magnus Junkie Moe, and then we'll see if we have time. You're just the author of the bill. Details. Magnus.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just got a general question if someone could help me with it. And first off, how many members typically make up a township board?
LTD.
Maybe Kent can answer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, a traditional township board is three supervisors. There is a teller and a clerk, but they do not have a vote at the township level. So the voting, deciding members are three supervisors.
Mr. Chairman, and maybe Mr. Solomon can help me on this also. Typically, how many votes would one of these people, one of the three members, get to be elected to the township board?
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus. It definitely varies, but just from perspective, last year when I was asked if we would oppose a filing fee increase, I said probably not, because most of our members run as a write-in anyhow, because they're too cheap to pay the $2. Very few, you're always, like any other race, going to have some that are very close. I know that there's one recount going on from the March elections right now. For the most part, they're running unopposed.
I'm just trying to get an understanding of this. If we talk about control, local control, and we talk about, worrying about some of these things, and I certainly think we do need local control, but, if we're only getting write-in members to run, and we have three people doing it, you don't need a lot of votes out there to take control of a township board, do you?
Mr. Chair, what Phil Magnus said is, by and large, again, it varies dramatically from region to region, but by and large, if there is a serious challenge that's going to lead to a tight race, yes, we have seen turnovers of town boards very rapidly if there's a major controversy. If the board is not doing the role of people, they will be gone.
Thank you. Okay. Question. We have until 10-2, and we're starting on amendments, but if we're not going to do amendments, if we don't, I guess the question is, Representative O'Trimmer, do you want to offer your four amendments? If you do, we will do it. If not, I'm going to allow more questions from the committee members for everybody, for both sides, for another 5 minutes, and we'll vote at 5-2. But do you want to offer the four amendments?
Sure, we can take more questions.
Okay. Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the author, to the townships, on the first of all, on the road section, we've had problems with the Commissioner of Transportation allocating money in any way, shape, or form rural Minnesota. I'm trying to figure out why on lines 10 and 11 you put up to 10% is appropriate for grants and loans to towns for this purpose. Why don't we put at least 10%? Then we're guaranteed to get the 10%. When it says up to, I will guarantee you the Department of Transportation will not ever give us 10%.
For this. What page are you on?
Page 5.
Oh, thank you, sir.
So why not put at least 10% as appropriated? Then we know we've got the 10% going out.
Mr. Solon?
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, I am not aware where this provision came from. We're certainly supportive of it, but we were not consulted or involved with the drafting of it, so I cannot comment as to why this wording was selected.
Representative Blaine, I assume this is coming sometime to the Finance Committee, so I don't have to do an amendment now, but it's something I'd like to look at as we go forward.
Do we have an answer to your question here?
Well, as Mr. Vanasek, is that another question on that section?
Madam Chair, sir.
The other question is that same section, the last line 16, why don't we stop after livestock operations, period? Why don't we put permitted after the effective day of this section? Because, my Hormel guy is here. We got all kinds of problems on our roads right now from turkey operations that need fixing. Why shouldn't we be able to apply, and some of them are fairly new, why shouldn't we be able to apply in our townships to fix some of the damage that's occurred from existing? Why do we have to just do it for new ones?
Mr. Chair, Representative Junky, I was just informed that this provision actually came as part of the governor's supplemental budget recommendations. So it is language coming from the governor's staff directly. As far as putting the period, from a township perspective, we certainly have an objection to that. To the extent that we said amendments have to be supported by everybody, I'd have to know that nobody else is opposing that period being inserted. I certainly wouldn't hurt us.
Mr. Chair, you just said this came from a governor's supplemental. This didn't come out of the task force.
Mr. Solon?
That is the information, Mr. Chair, that is the information. Mr. Benasik might have more direct information. He's had direct contact with the governor's staff.
Mr. Chair.
That begs the question, though. I mean, this is a finely crafted piece of legislation that has, I mean, any movement anyway on anything could upset the apple cart here. So I think Representative Junky has a very good point. Mr. Benasik.
Could you repeat the question?
Could you work with me between now and finance? Maybe we can change some of that in this paragraph?
We'd be happy to.
And, Mr. Chair, I'll move on. Back to the wealthy question. And, again, my concern is not necessarily one or two or how many members are requesting some economic analysis. My question is, why are we requiring it at all, both on a county and on a township level? Why am I holding up my permits? Why do we have to do more studies on our economic viability and other things on feedlots? I'm trying to get these permits moving quicker. Why am I putting a mandate in to have our local governments do studies on feedlot permits?
Representative Blaine?
Mr. Chair and Representative Junky, first of all, we're not forcing anyone to do the economic impact statement. It would have to be requested by a member of the board. But we also believe, too, in our workings with a representation from local units of government for them to make positive and informed decision-making, that they should discuss or have the opportunity to discuss the economic impact of a business that comes into the township.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, again, I just see it as a way, not only can the county request it or any member of the county board, but now you can go down, now a township can request it. You could have two studies requested according to this. It doesn't say one or the other. It says either or. So if I'm trying to hold up a permit anywhere in the state, I'd request that. I don't care if it comes out positive or negative, I'd request it, and then I'd go and find a county board member or a town board member to request it again.
Mr. Chair and Representative Junky, this economic impact statement, as Deputy Commissioner Osnes, I think, had relayed here, or one of the previous testifiers, this is not a lengthy report that is going to delay the permitting process. And if you members, one part of this bill that we didn't talk about, the development of the template, which is to me is a very key component to this piece of legislation, is something that we feel very strongly, and I think local units of government feel very strongly about, in helping to improve the timing and the time expectancy of the permit process. And it will lay that out very clearly, both for the producer and for local units of government, the permitting process that a producer will have to go through, and for the township officials and county officials, in other words, the local units of government, when this is brought forward to them to make a ruling on, they can go through and see that the producer has met all of the permit requirements before they're granted their local permit.
Mr. Song?
Mr. Chair, Representative Junky, I also would like to point out, I certainly understand your concerns, but in terms of that economic impact study, that is being requested at the time that a moratorium is being considered, not the actual permit itself. So what you're delaying is the adoption of the moratorium. The permit request itself will still have to be acted on pursuant to the 60-day rule, because at the local level, what they're applying for is that zoning certificate. It's not the state or county feedlot permit. It's the applicable zoning permit that's required, and so that kicks us into 1599. So we still have 60 days to say yes or no. The study is related to the moratorium, and the moratorium is what would potentially be the basis for denying and prohibiting the application for any new permits.
Just to finish up, Mr. Chair, and I just think you're going to rue the day that you're requesting more mandates, more studies. Usually, I realize that this is on your moratorium request. Usually, isn't a moratorium request unless a feedlot permit request has been put in place. So we're already moving in dual with this, because that's when a township is usually responding, is after someone's been asking for a permit. So to say they're separate entities, they really aren't. And this is just one more thing in the works that could gum up a permit if it isn't met exactly. People can question it. I really think you folks ought to think this through to put another mandate down on the local governments during this permit, because it is during the permit process.
Representative Moe, and then did you ask for a roll call, Representative Blaine, or not?
I would like a roll call.
It'll be a roll call in about a minute. And your question could be to anybody, proponents or opponents. Representative Moe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This question is for Mr. Vanasek, is that right? Or Mr. Solom. In this task force who looked at this bill, and I know it was a lengthy process. I talked to Representative Marquardt about it, and for the most part, I'm in support. However, the Office of Local Planning Assistance could actually do this, serve the role that's requested of the Department of Ag in here. Could you talk about how that department could serve that purpose and why perhaps it hasn't been included as opposed to the Department of Agriculture here?
Mr. Solon?
Representative David, the Local Planning Assistance Center could provide this training because that's what they do right now. They provide a wide variety of local planning assistance to cities, counties, and townships. Primarily in the rural areas. I believe when they testified on their budget stuff that something over 80% or more of their resources are devoted to requests from rural Minnesota, and townships being one of the largest members or users of that service. We have coordinated with them on a number of our training events. They provide neutral, unbiased information. They're a solid department that's there. The reason that the bill was drafted the way it is, as I stated before, is that the governor is recommending that that office, this planning center, be eliminated. And so if this bill stated that the planning center do the training and the governor is recommending that they eliminate the this center, we'd end up with a mandate for a program that doesn't exist anymore. So as I said, if you can help us save the planning center, great, but that's why it was drafted.
And Representative Moe, that's a good point, because when I was meeting with Land Stewardship Project, they were concerned about where the money was going, and I didn't realize that the outfit they wanted it to go to might not be there. So that's a whole other issue maybe we can work some things out on. Okay, last question, Representative Johnson, and then we will take the roll. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Final question for Mr. Solon here that picks up on some of the questions that Representative Welty was asking. I noticed in the, we've been talking a lot about the economic impact statement and the fact that agricultural and environmental were crossed out. In your best judgment, is there anything in the language, should this be adopted as is currently proposed, that would prevent a county board, a township, from asking questions? The fact that this language is being excised from this piece of legislation, does that mean that either governmental entity would be forbidden or would have difficulty in raising questions about environmental concerns or agricultural practices?
Mr. Solon? Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative. No, there is nothing that would prohibit us from voluntarily seeking out of our own accord any kind of review, be it an EAW, be it any other kind of study or review that the town board would feel necessary to give them the information before making any zoning decision, before making any permit decision. It simply is removing language from a current mandate and making it optional instead of a mandated provision in terms of the environmental and agricultural effects. Why they're taking that language out, I would have to defer to somebody that actually sat on a subcommittee. The representative from our office did not address that in his notes to me, and unfortunately it was in fee for the false today training 500 town officers.
Okay, with that, Representative Blaine reduces the motion to House File 1732 as amended. We recommend pass and send to the Committee on Local Government. Local Government. The clerk will take the roll.
David.
Yes.
Blaine.
Yes.
Yes. Hamilton.
Yes.
Heidgerken.
Yes.
Johnson.
Yes.
Junkie.
Aye.
Conan.
Yes.
Magnus.
Yes.
Moe.
Yes.
Otremba.
No.
Dennis.
Yes.
Erdahl.
Yes.
Welty.
Yes.
Okay, the motion prevails. 13 ayes, 1 nay. The motion prevails. Members, 2:30 tomorrow, basement hearing room. You should love me. I say that they were trying to, Thomas was trying to take the basement hearing room from us. 2:30 to midnight, I kept it. That's what seniority does. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.
Thank you.
Good day.